Hello, I am Kyle.
And I'm Ryan.
And when our powers combine, we form Experience Grind Podcast. The podcast where, for better or worse, for good or bad, we will grind out every experience we encounter and give you our honest opinions on those experiences. Ooh, that was a nice Z snap, bro.
I know.
You got sassy.
I only snapped one time, and then I had like a really lazy hand that did nothing else.
Your body jiving behind it, though,
I did
made
not
up.
Commit.
That
was good.
That's a Z snap.
I think
though.
Even the audio listeners,
I
think they got that.
I picked
that.
Up my Z snap from years of watching In Living Color.
I don't think I've seen a single episode.
What? Yeah. But you are, I always forget that, like, you're 3 years younger than me.
Yeah, it just didn't appeal to me at that age.
That was one of the, like, my family, again, we talked about weird things my family enjoys. That was another one. Like, we didn't watch Saturday Night Live. We watched In Living Color. It was weird. I grew up watching In Living Color.
Oh.
We loved Jim Carrey, of course.
Yeah.
That's where he got his big start, his big break, so.
Mm-hmm. And a bunch of weigh-ins.
All of them. It was Jim Carrey, some other white chick. And then every member of the Wayans family.
I don't know who the white chick is.
I don't either. I think I only remember her from In Living Color. That's pretty much it.
That's sad. Yeah. That's a sad, sad state of affairs.
It's life for actresses sometimes. So, here we are, buddy.
Yes, we are
back
here.
Back in this saddle again.
Mm-hmm.
This is a movie week, and we're working off the secret list that nobody knows about. So if this movie was on the list or not, I could have added this yesterday. They have no fucking clue now. You guys are flying by the seat of their pants. They have no idea what's coming out. So
yeah, suspense, it's exciting times.
Suspense broken. This movie's not very suspenseful, so we'll go ahead and just break it now.
Ooh.
So we're going to talk about the artist. It was the... Fuck, I should have looked this up. It won the Academy Award, I'm saying like 4 years ago?
2011.
For best movie. Was it? Mm-hmm. Is that four years?
It was best picture. Yeah. 2011 for best picture. And I think John Dujardin. Five. It was.
Because it's 2016 now.
It was a 2011 movie, so it would have been at the beginning of 2012.
Okay. That's when it won. Okay.
So 4 years.
Yeah.
Not that it matters, but yeah. One best picture.
John Dujardin.
Here's the beginning of me mispronouncing every goddamn French name in this movie. But
and that's
John
okay.
Dujardin.
Yeah.
He won best actor.
And he
too.
Totally deserved
and
it.
And they got like a ton of nominations. Like this movie.
It won five. It says it there
yeah.
proudly. And I don't know. We'll get into it more.
Yes.
But it is perfect Oscar movie.
But that I mean, is the movie we will be talking
yeah,
about tonight.
We will be.
Yeah.
But before we get into that.
But first.
We're going to talk about something else.
Donald Trump.
No.
This is the time.
I mean.
Listen to me. Listen to what I'm going to say.
Vote Trump.
Vote Trump. He wants to make America good again.
Not just good.
Great.
Trump the tiger. That's fucking good. No, I don't ever want to get political.
No.
Ever. But for real, please don't vote for Donald Trump.
Oh, you just got political.
That's the only thing I will ever say.
Oh, no.
Come on, man.
All right. Well, then.
I only have to say it because we did tell people to vote Trump, and I want them to know, at least me, like, that was completely sarcastic.
Says Kyle, I think you should vote Trump.
Okay, there we go.
He wants to make America great. Also, border. I mean, that's something, right?
He does want to put up a wall. It's going to be a great wall.
Going to space again. Trump is going to take us to the moon.
In a gold-plated rocket ship. Now, that's that true. I would pay to see.
I actually would, too.
I would, actually, because it'd be with my tax money. So.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, that was good.
Who says you don't have comedic timing?
Everybody
I meet.
But my mother, and she also says I'm handsome. And we know that's fucking false.
Oh, that's sad. That got sad real quick. So, what are we really talking about? We're not talking about Donald Trump.
No, we're going to talk about a little thing you texted me very excitedly. You creamed your panties.
Put on panties just to watch the trailer because I knew I would be creaming.
Yeah, and it was the trailer for the new Captain America Civil War movie.
Yes. This is, I guess, technically trailer 2.
Yep, and this will be the final trailer because this comes out very soon.
It comes out in May. There still might be one more trailer.
Batman vs. Superman is in 2 weeks, though, right? Am I right in that? Okay.
Yeah, because Daredevil is next week, and then Batman Superman's the next week. March is a good month.
It's going to be good.
It's kind of crazy how many movies and TV shows are coming out
this
month.
I'm glad that we're going to talk about this trailer because I don't want to talk about the shit movie I saw last
night.
Which
we're not going to say what it is. Use your brains to think, audience.
It was not good. What?
Mystery box is all I'm going to say. Mystery box.
Mystery box full of doo-doo.
Doo-doo.
Dude, it was not good. But I want to get that taste out of my mouth with this lovely glass of André champagne and let you take over and start talking about this Captain America first.
All right. Real talk here. Captain America is the best superhero ever, has the best superhero movies, and this looks like it's going to be just the same. I cannot be more excited for a movie this year. And this is in a year where we get a new Star Wars movie, a new X-Men movie, Deadpool, one of like my favorite characters from the comic books, came to life in a fantastic movie. This is the one I'm looking forward to. A year where Batman and Superman are going to fight.
Yeah.
This is the movie.
I would only disagree in the fact that he's the best superhero.
Yeah, that's fine, I know.
But that's just me.
I know, because he has nuance and character. You like him dumb and strong, like Superman like
him,
and Hulk.
I do really like him dumb and strong. Right? I would not say Superman is dumb, though. Superman is incredibly intelligent.
He's incredibly intelligent, but very naive. And
also, to say Hulk is dumb, it's not true either. He's just blinded by rage.
Dumb.
Bruce Banner is he the second smartest in the Marvel Universe?
I think it goes Reed Richards, then
Tony.
There's like a... Oh, no. There's
like
a new
third?
One that like... Thaddeus Cho, like he's like some kind of X-Men character. I can't remember his name, his X-Men name.
Okay.
But he's one of the smartest. Then I think Franklin Richard, the Richard son's up there, and Tony Stark.
I know Tony's really high up there, and Bruce is like...
And then Bruce.
I thought it used to be Tony was like second or third, and Bruce is always right behind Tony.
Yeah, number one. I think number one's always been uncontested Reed Richards.
Really?
I did not pick up on Reed being that from the comics.
I thought Doom was smarter than Reed.
Doom's pretty smart. He's one of the top five geniuses.
I know that Doom talked a god out of his powers somehow. And that's pretty fucking smart.
Right, but if we're going to go on that, then Reed Richards always beats Dr. Doom.
He does.
So, I mean, who has to be smarter there?
I don't know. I don't really like Fantastic Four.
I never got into them.
Like, not even in the comics. Like, the only Fantastic Fours I ever read were the ones where they fought Spider-Man.
So, this is good. I like this. Because I think we had, like, a Facebook comment about, like, why don't you guys do comics? Now we're going to talk some comics.
Okay.
Jonathan Hickman just did a run of Fantastic Four maybe like 6-7 years ago, right before the Human Torch died. That was like how this like, I think it was like 60 series issue ran for. And at the end was Johnny Storm sacrifices his life, dies, and they become the Fantastic Foundation, which Spider-Man joins in Johnny Storm's place.
Okay, well, that's kind of cool.
Fantastic. Jonathan Hickman right now is like writing like the big event, like the Secret War that Marvel's going through. He's just incredibly smart, has like some insanely fun adventures for them to travel, and they do it right. It's like family is the most important thing, but then we also get these space adventures. It's like it's the Incredibles in outer space, and it's fucking
so,
really good.
And it's like quirky and lighter.
Yeah, and really smart. Like all of them... Because the Fantastic Four has powers, but they're also really, really smart, and it involves like these plans and like outthinking people, so it becomes like these really cerebral books, like almost like a Nolan level, like kind of
really
thought provoking plot structure, and it's really good. So I think there are good Fantastic Four.
See, and I'm sure
there
are. They just, again, they never really appear.
Well, and you wouldn't know with the movies they've been churning out,
exactly,
because none of the movies have been good.
That's another big reason I avoided them, because there's never, ever been a good Fantastic Four movie. At this point, I doubt there ever will be.
If Marvel Studios gets them back and they can do a Fantastic Four set in the 1960s and you have that kind of cheesy factor already there, so then you can forgive it, and then you do some like quirky outer space stuff, I think it's perfect. You do a time period piece, kind of like they did with Days of Future Past with superheroes in the 60s, Mad Men era Fantastic Four.
As long as they got
I'm sold.
Doom. I don't know much about the Fantastic Four, but because of previous co-host Nathan, he does like the series a lot. I'm very exposed to Dr. Doom, and I know Doom is just an incredible badass. Like
he is, and we've gotten so far the guy from Nip Tuck as Dr. Doom, and then
awful.
This whiny emo kid in the most recent one, who then turns into a crash test dummy.
Yeah.
Like, that's his Dr. Doom costume.
It was really weird and bad. And
yeah. Yeah.
I didn't get that, so I forget what I was going to say.
I don't know. I just talked about comic books. So, guy
cool.
on Facebook, we talked comics for you.
Yeah, a little bit. So, would you say he's your favorite comic writer? Who is your favorite comic writer?
Ooh, that's a good
Because I know my
question.
Answer to this, and it's actually not a Marvel.
Interesting. I mean, I think the safe answer would be to say Alan Moore, because Alan Moore does some fantastic stuff with Superman, and I don't like Superman, but when he does it, and then Jeff Johns, who did like the All-Star Superman?
No, that was Grant Morrison.
Grant Morrison.
Who was my
Grant
favorite.
Morrison's pretty great.
Grant
not Jeff Johns.
My favorite writer. He fucking... Yeah. I've never read anything by him I don't like. So.
Oh, okay. Well, you go with Grant Morrison. I will pick a controversial one, and I will say Daniel Way, who has done, I think, the second most recent. There are Deadpool books, like right before Brian Posehn took over. He did them, and he just nailed that tone. Just like the cleverness of Deadpool while still maintaining like a funny element to it. But I like his stuff. Not a lot of people do. I really like Daniel Way. There's not been an issue I haven't liked of his.
What else has he done? I'm not familiar with him.
I think he did some of the... He did a reboot of the Thunderbolts maybe 4 years ago, which included Deadpool, Elektra, Punisher, Red Hulk, and I feel like there's one more. Ghost Rider.
You have my interest.
Yeah.
Red Hulk there.
Yeah, it's... And do you know who the Red Hulk is? It's General Thunderbolt Ross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's this team that pretty much hates each other, like sent on missions to do dirty work.
It's like the Suicide Squad.
It's like the Suicide Squad.
For Marvel.
Except with people you care about. Because I think even the worst person on that team, Ghost Rider, is better than the best person on the Suicide Squad, Harley Quinn.
Dude, fucking Suicide Squad has Deadshot.
Deadshot, oh my god, Deadshot is such a bland character. I'm a villain who can shoot well. That's it. There is no depth to his character.
So what is the alternating depth of Hawkeye as a hero that can shoot well?
I'm not going to defend...
Okay.
I will defend Hawkeye, because Hawkeye is fantastic now. He's just finished a run, I think, by Daniel Acuna. Where he's been like in the city, he's out of the Avengers, like he doesn't kind of care. He's in this slumlord apartment, and it's just about him versus a bunch of thugs trying to take over his building. It's like 24 issues, but he has like a little hot girl ward who's training with him, and it's like really kind of creative and inventive what they do. They had like a whole episode where he lost his hearing, like he got shot like real close in the ear, lost his hearing, so the whole issue is completely silent. There are no words. You just pick up everything through like the subtle context of like how his character moves.
I wish we could have saved that for just a bit, because that would have been a great segue to the artist.
Oh yeah,
but I'm not ready to talk about the artist yet.
I know we have to talk about the Civil
War.
We do
have to talk about this. So let's get cranking on that.
All right. So Civil War, for those who don't know, was a book in I want to say 2004, 2005,
early 2000s.
Yeah,
early to mid.
I'd say
mids, because it was pretty. It was a little bit after 9/11.
It was, yeah.
I think it was like 2008, 2009, honestly.
It plays off of... Yeah. No, it was before that, because I read it in college.
Okay.
I want to say at least 2005, 2006, around there.
Okay.
But it's written by Mark Millar, who is a comic writer who likes to shock and awe. His books are Kick-Ass, Hit Girl. He wrote Kingsman, the book based off the movie.
Yeah,
and he does these very shocking things. So like when he writes for the Marvel Universe, it's a very shocking thing.
Well, and it was a big thing, too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, it was a super big event. I think it's probably Marvel's most famous event.
It's one of those rare ones that bleeds over into the mainstream. Much like there was that DC-Marvel crossover in like the late 90s.
Yeah.
That was pretty huge, even though it wasn't that good.
Mm-mm.
But yeah, Civil War was huge. I mean, I remember reading about it on like fucking Yahoo News and stuff.
Yeah, it's not quite like to the level of like the death of Superman, but like it's for Marvel, it's the death of Superman. Like there's nothing more kind of memorable with their runs. And what it is an accident happens with some young heroes. They end up nuking a small town, killing a lot of innocent people, and the government gets kind of scared. They're like, we need to kind of control these people because these superhero villains and heroes are just causing a lot of casualties. We need to control them. So Tony Stark, Reed Richards, and someone else, I don't remember, it might have been Bruce Banner, they get together and they come up with a bunch of ideas to how to stop this problem, how they can work with the government to work on the superhero stuff and create peace. And their idea is to create a prison where they store all the super villains and potentially what it turns out to be is like the superheroes who start resisting. And so Tony Stark leads the charge of, you know, the government's right. We need to be in check. These superheroes cannot be allowed to roam on their own. And Captain America takes a stand. He's like, that's wrong. The government should not have ultimate power like that. And it creates this giant rift in the Marvel Universe. Like you see
big dichotomy,
heroes and villains working together to fight like
other heroes and villains.
Yeah.
And hero on hero, which is what Civil War, the movie, has turned into.
Yeah.
I know the movie it's not a group of plucky superheroes nuking a city. It's more more of the events of the movies that have happened have come into check now.
Yeah. Like, I from this trailer, I think there's going to be an event.
You think so?
At the very beginning.
There could be. I think I can't say. Yeah. For, I mean, it would make sense. I'm not betting on it.
But. I would bet on it. I'll bet my money right now that it opens up much like a James Bond movie where there's like a big set piece and it ends with like a big destructive explosion. And I think it's going to be at like the UN or something, because there are shots in this recent trailer of T'Challa, the Black Panther character. He looks like he's in rubble and he's crying over somebody. So somebody dies in this big explosion. And I think this is the event that kind of puts it all into focus. It's like, you know, this big attack in New York, all the collateral damage you did there. And what is the fucking name of that city in Age of Ultron?
It's that like made up Chechnya or
it's
something.
It's something. I can't
it's very
think of it
Russian.
Right now.
I know it. Yeah.
Sokovia.
Sokovia.
Yeah. So the destruction of Sokovia, what happened in Washington, D.C. in the Winter Soldier, like all these events, like, you know, you superheroes are like in the middle of all this shit and you kind of cause like a lot of property damage and casualties. And guess what? You dropped the whole city of Sokovia. They're poor as shit. They're not going to be able to rebuild it. So you just destroyed their, you know, ecosystem forever, pretty much. Like, you need to be held accountable. And I think because of that, these lines in the sand are drawn. And Tony Stark, I think, feels very guilty about Ultron, what he did there. Because, like, that's his doing. Like, he, that Sokovia stuff, all Tony Stark's fault. So he's going to feel super guilty. He's going to side with the government. We need to be kept in check. Steve Rogers, Captain America, kind of lands on the other side because Bucky, his best friend, the Winter Soldier, is slowly starting to come around, but he has a dark past. Like, he has a checkered past where he's killed a bunch of people. Yeah. Like, he's no angel. So, like, it's kind of hard to find the redemption in this character.
But was he also not, like, kind of brainwashed during that?
He was, but so, it doesn't matter because he's killed all these people. But I think that's where it's going to be very interesting, because Black Widow was that person. Black Widow was an assassin. How many people did she kill? She has red in her ledger, so that's thematic depth.
She signs up with Tony, with Iron Man.
This is a play.
You think?
I think this, because she's a spy.
She is a spy.
And since she was with Steve and Captain America Winter Soldier, I think those two have a bond. I don't think her and Tony Stark have the same kind of bond. So I think she might be spying. I will also bet money on that. I think Widow will be in there.
I'm not going to wager.
No, we don't have to wager.
Yeah, I'm not going to wager on that because I don't know. I will tell you, I have some concerns.
I think I know what they are.
You want to guess?
Yeah, Spider-Man.
Not Spider-Man. Costume aside, I think Spider-Man will be a good addition, and it's good to get him in there. Mm-hmm. I've dealt with worse costumes. I don't like it, but I don't hate it. Okay. That's just my only thing.
I love it.
Yeah, I know I you do. It. And we talk. Me personally, I think, honestly, the best Spider-Man suit on film is the Tobey Maguire ones. That's just me.
I think he looks a little bulky.
He does.
He looks a little too bulky for Spider-Man.
Yeah, I agree. But I like the design of that suit. Mm-hmm. It has very... I like the deep red and the deep blue compared to the brighter. But I get that they're also trying to distance, and that's fine.
Yeah. I think it's... I think I said this to you and Brooks, friend of the show, Brooks, who we were talking about with
Mr. Brooks.
Mr. Brooks, fixer. there's a plug for you, buddy. But we were talking about this, and the reason I like this new suit is because it's very Silver Age Spider-Man. Yeah, yeah. It is what Steve Ditko drew on the pages like in the 1960s and 70s.
I would really like it if it was full Silver Age Spider-Man and it had the webs under the armpits.
That's what I was saying. The only thing missing are the webs.
If it had those, I would be so on board with the suit. Mm. But not having those, it's not fully clicking with. But
that's okay.
That's not my concern with the movie.
What
my
is your concern? Yeah.
Is I'm worried about it having a similar feel to Avengers 2. And in the sense that my biggest complaint with any movie, and especially with these superhero movies of late, and now knowing that this movie is almost 2.5 hours long.
Which Batman versus Superman
is
longer,
also I know. And I have the same concerns with that.
Well, I think there's reason for that one.
But they have the similar, it's the same concern for me on both of them is bloat. And by bloat, I mean too big for its britches. And also, dude, there are a shit ton of characters in Captain America Civil War. Like, holy fuck, that clash in the airport, dude, there are like 9 characters on screen fighting one another. And I just don't see investing myself in 9 separate characters. I don't get how it's... that's just my one concern, because every other movie that's tried it will eventually falter. Like, not every, because you know, Days of Future Past did it very well. And I still had concern and a lot of emotion invested in those characters. That's just my concern and my worry. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
No, that's fine.
But it did happen in Avengers too, especially when, you know, once Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver show up, then it's just even more characters. And
Age of Ultron felt bloated.
Yes, yes,
it did. But here, I'm gonna ease your concerns right here. I think Age of Ultron was the work of a director who was tired of the Avengers.
Yeah,
I think Joss Whedon blew a fuse.
I think he phoned it in
yeah.
a little bit. And yeah,
I do
hate to say that about, you know,
because I love Joss Whedon and like I root for him, but you do interviews with him and it's like Daniel Craig now who's saying like, oh, I'd rather eat glass and be James Bond again. Like you see that same kind of fatigue with Whedon. But I think Civil War is going to be okay. And this is the big difference between it and Batman versus Superman is Civil War. I think it is going to be largely a Captain America story. And this is all what they're saying. Like, I think these characters are going to be a kind of side. I think it's largely going to focus on Steve, Iron Man, and Bucky and those three relationship. And there's going to be new characters like they did with the Winter Soldier, had Falcon show up. Like, we'll have Black Panther in this one. We'll have a new character to introduce. Spider-Man, I think, is going to be such a fucking small part. Like, I think it's going to be a glorified cameo and a setup for later. Like, I don't see Spider-Man being a part of it. But the emotional arc, the thematic way, all this depth is going to come not from Civil War, but from the relationship we've had with these characters for like 10 years now. Like, we've lived with Tony Stark since 2007 or 2008, one of those years. So like, when if he becomes the villain of this piece, and it's going to be heartbreaking because we've seen their relationship, unlike Batman versus Superman, which is just like, here's Batman, here's Superman, who you've seen one movie of, here's a new Batman, and they're going to have like words with each other. It's not going to have that same weight because in their 2.5 hours, they're going to have to set up Batman, they're going to have to set up a relationship, they're going to have to set up the fight, and then they're going to have to set up a resolution. That's a lot of weight, that's a lot of bouncing.
And then they've
out.
Also got shit ton of characters they're cramming into this.
Yes.
Aquaman's in here.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman.
Which is
Doomsday.
Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Maybe General Zod will pop up again because you see his body in the trailer. It's just too much. But I think Civil War might be tighter because it's like, here's a falling out. And I think it's going to end on a negative note. Like, I think it's just going to be like, you know, the heroes have a fight. And one side's defeated and they just split. And it's just a sad shit ending. It's not like there's going to be a big fight or a lead up to a big fight and then we're going to resolve and then we're going to do all this stuff.
You don't think that a villain's going to come in that they unify against at the end?
No.
No? Okay.
No. Cool. I literally think from what I'm seeing in this trailer is that airport fight is going to be like the big set piece at the end of the film. And then they showed the raft, which is where they in this recent trailer, they showed the raft, which is where they're going to hold the superpowered heroes and villains. I think you see Tony Stark flying to that. You see Bucky and Captain America fighting Tony Stark in this dark, dimly lit place. I think that's going to be on the raft. And I think that's the final fight of the movie is I think they're fighting. I think Captain America's going to die. Tony Stark's going to have to kill him. Maybe not even willingly, and I think that's how the movie's going to end.
I don't think Captain America dies in this one. I don't think that happens.
It's either him or Iron Man.
I don't think
if
it's
anybody,
either of them.
Oh, no.
I think it's War Machine. I think it's Don Cheadle. I think Don Cheadle will die.
I think because they show him looking like he's going to die in the trailer,
I know. It's
too on the nose. It's like going into Avengers Age of Ultron and be like, Hawkeye's going to die because it has to be him. And like they play with that and they're like, they set him up to be the character that dies. I don't think that's going to happen in the War Machine.
I also think the airport fight scene is going to be mid-movie. I think that's the mid-movie fight, not final. So,
I think
but
it's
that's me.
Final. Yeah.
So,
like I said, I don't think there's going to be a villain.
It lends
I think
more
it's
credence
just
to your thing if Spider-Man is in a very minute section and he shows up for the final fight. That makes sense.
That's
I see that. But I think the airport's mid. So, but anyways.
We'll see. But anyway.
I am excited about it.
I thought it was a fantastic trailer.
My one concern, again, is just too many characters. Yeah. I hope they do it well. Yeah.
This guy. This guy was riding on Hawkeye's arrow. I'm fucking done. Like, that's it. Like, fucking take all my money. You can come wherever you want, movie. I will take it all.
And not only that, he also...
You showed me Ant-Man riding on a fucking arrow. I'm done. Like,
and
I'm fucking
using it to get up to Tony Stark and rolling down his arm. Like,
God damn.
That's cool.
It's such a good shot.
Black Panther looks amazing, too. I'm very excited about it. It's going to be good. So, I just hope it's better than the travesty I saw last night, which it should be.
Oh, yeah.
I bet you fucking Batman versus Superman is better than that.
I don't know. Maybe for you, but I don't think there's any way Batman versus Superman is going to be any movie this year.
Anyways, so we're going to go into the artist. Right? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Speaking
of being artistic and the Roaring 20s, the highlight of the Hollywood era.
Era.
We have the lovely, as always, Andre, California Champagne. California is where Hollywood is located. Hollywood is where the artist takes place, and also outside in L.A. a little bit.
Let me tell you, Hollywood in the 1920s, specifically 1927, would be a lot more happening if Andre was back then.
Yeah. Andre, when time machines are invented, like, you need to get the keys to that bitch and go back and start Andre as the premier champagne of Hollywood parties in the 20s.
You know what killed the black and white movie? Andre, because it brings so much color into the world.
Oh, damn. You can't, you drink it, you automatically see color. I see that.
I hear all kinds of new noises, too.
Yeah.
Just sounds, cacophony of sounds.
To the 1920s, to Hollywood, to Andre, California Champagne.
A hashtag epic with Andre.
And hashtag black and white as fuck.
Black and white as fuck.
Ooh, I made that one up this week.
That was a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked it. I came
with that one. I didn't come with it. I just made that up on the spot. I don't know why I said I came with it.
You did say you came with it. You came at it hot, like you with a microphone. You came at it.
And yeah, so that's our sponsorship.
Yeah.
And we're going to
have a musical interlude.
Yeah, transfer into a musical interlude, as you refer to it as a bump.
A bumper.
Like a bump of cocaine.
I would not refer to it as a bump of cocaine.
But I would.
You would.
Because sometimes you got to get a bump to get yourself to jump. So anyways.
Wow.
Before we listen, what is this piece of music?
A bump to get yourself a jump while you vote for Trump.
Ooh, man, you are.
But don't go too far because I might take a dump.
Viral marketing. You should be his campaign manager.
My
dog.
Rap game is not in a slump.
Damn, dog. I mean, it kind of is because you're rhyming the same, just different.
But I think that's what like, they do, right?
I'm the chief of beef and
I eat so much I queef.
Sound engineer Andrew even like that when he broke character. He got a giggle on that one. Good job. Nice job.
As sound I engineer Andrew. To do this podcast just to make him smile and crack up sometimes.
Thank you, sound engineer Andrew, for everything you do. You're the best. So you want to give the listeners and the audience at home watching our gorgeous faces, what section of the movie is this interlude from? Is this the
I think it's the overture. So okay. This is like the main theme.
It plays
theme
throughout
the
entire film.
Yeah, this is the main theme. So
and music plays a big part in this movie because, spoilers, surprise, there's no speaking. Wink. That's the Pepe Miller wink.
Oh, is it?
You see that? Oh, man.
It's not the same coming from you.
No. But
it's not the same.
Who could... Man, that Pepe Miller. That Pepe Miller, I tell you, huh? The name's
Who's
Miller.
Who's that girl?
Pepe Miller. So here we go. It's the beginning overture that plays generally throughout the movie. It's the main theme.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be right back. There was our bump and our
a literal bump.
A really pathetic tribute to silent film and black and white film of the 20s bygone era.
Eh.
We'll take our Oscar now.
Yeah,
thank
I mean,
you.
I thought it was pretty great.
Thank you.
And thank you, sound engineer Andy, for that fantastic effect work right there.
Yeah, you know, the man does great work.
We're saying this in advance, so you have to live up to it now.
He will. I will tell you, in my entire life, sound engineer Andy has never let me down in anything and has always exceeded any expectation I had for him. He's the greatest. One more. We'll not go black and white for this, but to sound engineer Andy, tell you.
Sound engineer Andy. Let's just talk about sound engineer Andy.
He is the
artist smartest.
I want to talk about the artist because sound engineer Andy really fucking likes this movie.
He does.
This is one of the few that Andrew will get excited about?
Yeah, I've not known Andrew as long as you have, but I've not seen him very excited about many movies, and this is the only one I've heard him express like, yay, that one.
Yeah.
That's also a horrible impersonation. Does not sound anything like him.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad.
I love the artist.
Andrew is Bobcat Goldthwait in disguise. Surprise, everybody. Bobcat Goldthwait. He did 4 Police Academy movies, moved to Bloomington, Indiana, and became our podcast sound engineer. And lives under the name Andrew.
Guys, I had a real rough go there. Life got real hard.
God damn. Drugs, man. God, why did I go Mr. Maggie? I'm sorry. I ruined it. Let's fucking talk about this movie, man. Jesus.
All right, The Artist.
I want you to give me a 1-minute breakdown of this movie. I don't know if I will, because it's not a lot here.
There's
it
not.
Just does it well. So with that, starting the clock, timer, and go.
The Artist is a movie from 2011. It's a French film, but it doesn't matter because it's a silent black and white movie that's a love letter to Hollywood in the 1920s and 30s. And it deals with the coming of sound in movies. The talkies are coming. So the silent movies are going out of touch. And there's one actor, George
Valentine.
Thank you. George Valentine, who refuses to change. He kind of gets stuck in the silent pictures. And in the meantime, I'm horrible at these. In the meantime, there's a new girl, Pepe Miller, who he kind of falls for.
God, I love that.
She
Pepe
is
Miller.
Amazing. She kind of skyrockets in Hollywood. She's going places. And then she is one who easily embraces the talkies in these new sound pictures. And it's this kind of doomed relationship and his reluctance to move into this new frontier, all while, you know, completely silent.
15 like, seconds.
There's only one word. Is it? It's one word at the end, right?
Yeah, there's a few. John Goodman and the director speak,
too.
Oh,
yeah. Okay.
But, and yeah.
But that's it. I mean, really, there's not a lot. This movie is kind of slight in its
story.
So
there we go. That's it.
Now we're just talking.
Click, click, click. Done. Then, so,
yeah.
I think that was perfect. I cannot add anything to that.
I wouldn't say perfect, but there's not a lot you can
exactly.
really say for
that's
the story.
The thing. Like, The Artist, it's not treading new ground. Mm-mm. It is, I mean, even in the, it's a fucking silent movie. There has not been a silent movie in, like, fucking 50, 60 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, there might have been some artistically. I don't know. I'm not that deaf. None have reached the level that The Artist has.
The Antichrist had a 6-minute scene that was in black and white with sex and a child dying that I think is as artistically beautiful. That's not true.
We're going to get to that movie at some point.
Hopefully never.
Hold on to your butts when that happens, folks. But anyways, so The Artist. Yeah, it's one man's dealing with his inevitable march forward of time. He eventually, you know, I think it's the struggle of most, especially powerful men. They eventually all become irrelevant.
Yeah, it's kind of the cool thing is this story is so simple, yet thematically, I think it resonates even to today. Because like at any point in time, like, you know, Bob Dylan wrote, the times they are changing. And that's what this movie is. It's a man who is behind the times. He refuses to change and then just kind of slowly has to accept it and like learn how to deal with it. And that's, I think,
he resists a lot. He falls into a deep depression and then eventually comes to terms. And then the person that he helped create eventually turns around and helps bring him back. And I love it. It's a great full circle character arc of both characters. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say it's a perfect movie.
No.
But it is really, really good.
It is not a perfect movie, but yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think it's very specific in who will like it, but the people who appreciate film will love this
movie. Will love it, yeah. And I think it has a pretty broad appeal, too. I mean, the one part that is the hardest is that, and you gotta understand, and I think it is based understanding human emotion, because even there's a lot of times when people talk in the movie and they don't have the words on the screen, but because of the actor's skill, you know the gist of what's happening, and it's a very emotive film in that regard. It's very heavy in mime.
Yeah, the two leads specifically are so expressive with their face that most of the times, like when they're doing it, you understand it before you even see the speaking
cards. Yeah, you know
cards.
What's happened. And it does really well with that. And another thing that it does well, you know, a lot of times it's bad when there's overacting But this movie excels in it because it almost needs it. And but it doesn't feel like overacting unless you're like really looking for that. But just movements and facial expressions are a lot larger and more emphasized than they would be.
They're more dynamic.
Yeah, a lot more.
They have to be.
But it works so well, man. Mm. It's a cute, quirky, fun, emotional film. Mm-hmm. And it gets heavy at some points, but never too heavy for itself. There is the final scene is kind of weird where he has the gun in his mouth.
Oh, that's like one of my favorite scenes. His depression stuff, I think, kind of bogs the movie down a little bit. Like this movie is, I think, an hour and 40 minutes.
But it is an hour and 40.
It is very fast paced and energetic until you get to around the end of the second act where George Valentin.
Yep.
He gets depressed and like sinks to a low. Like
he becomes an alcoholic. He gets drunk.
Yeah, and it's what you would expect in any movie. It's like the very typical arc, and I think it kind of slows down the pacing.
Exactly, and that's my one. I think this movie could have shaved off about 10 minutes and been almost near perfect.
I agree.
But other than that, you know.
But the gun thing is my favorite scene in this whole movie.
Really, it's not mine, but
it's one of the best gags, and I think you can only do it in this movie, which is so you simultaneously see George Valentin like sink to like the lowest of lows, and he pulls out a gun and he's contemplating shooting himself. And since it's a silent movie, you hear nothing, everything's portrayed through these sound cards.
And the music. The music is getting intense, yeah. The violins are
and then Peppy is on her way to save him and she's racing really fast. And so George starts to pull the gun up. I don't remember where.
He puts it in his mouth.
And then the title card goes, bang. So you think he's shooting himself, but then it's Peppy got into an accident.
Right in front of his burnt down apartment.
Yeah. And I think that's so clever. And that's a joke that would only work in this movie. It would not work.
It does work
in
really well.
Movie.
But the thing that it gets so serious and she barges in and sees him with the gun and you see it like you're really about to kill yourself, and then he does something and the gun fires, and the best character in this movie, second best character in this movie is the dog. The dog fucking kills it.
Oh, that's not fair. He's not the second best character.
You don't
He's
think
the
so?
Third best. I think Peppy and George, they both do a fantastic
Peppy
job.
Peppy is the best character in this movie.
I think she is too.
Oh my
but
God,
I think George,
man,
is number two. I think he does a fantastic
George is
job
great.
As well.
Yeah, the dog is just, he's fun and he's great comedic relief.
Yeah, and he's so, this is a weird thing to say when you're watching a movie, but he's so well trained. Like specifically there's a shot where they're at the table and the dog mimics exactly George's motions.
They have that little
perfectly.
Yeah, it's good. The dog is a central part to this movie. He's not a weird tacked on thing. Like he is just as much a part of this movie as all the other characters, and he's George's pet, but he's also in all the movies as like his sidekick, and he's a cute little Jack Russell Terrier.
Mm-hmm. So I think I interrupted, but you were gonna say the dog had the best payoff of that scene, right?
Oh no, it's not the best. It's the weirdest because it's so heavy because he's just almost contemplated suicide, and the gun goes off, and then the dog has played dead when George has this thing where he shoots him with his finger and he plays dead, and the dog does that, and then him and Peppy share a laugh, and everything's okay, and it's just it goes from so serious to it's just such a joke. It's like, what is
it's a weird tonal shift.
Yeah that's the only thing.
Yeah, I kind of like it though, because it kind of needs to be kind of peppy like that, but it is so weird that it goes so dark and serious right before.
Yeah,
but
that's the only thing.
I like the payoff. I don't think it's earned, maybe. Like I think that payoff would have worked if they handled the darker stuff better, but
yeah,
I don't know. We're speculating here. I don't know if it would have been better, but I think it might have been better.
One of my favorite scene, the part, it's about the midway point when George realizes that, you know, talkies are coming. And he's back in his dressing room and he sets his drink down on the table and he hears the drink set down and he does it again. And then he knocks over a brush and he starts hearing sound in the world. Mm-hmm. But then he tries to speak and he can't speak. There's no sound coming there. And it's this great contrast where sound, it's the first time you've really heard sound effects in the movie, and it's only for like a little 5-minute little section, and then it turns out it's a nightmare, blah, blah, blah. But it's just so well done, and it adds it right at the perfect time, because you're, at this point, you've accepted that, oh, this is a full silent movie, there's not going to be sound, and then they trick you, and they put sound in, and then they take it away, but it really grabs your attention at that section, and it's good.
It's a great visual metaphor, and again, it's like, it's a really clever sight gag that wouldn't work in any other movie.
Nope.
Like, it's perfect. I wrote three scenes down that I love. We just talked about two of them. Because that one I also love. I think that's a perfect scene.
It's great.
But I also, one of my favorite things in this whole movie is when Pepe's with the jacket and she uses the jacket
as
wraps
George.
Around so perfectly. Yeah. Like, it's the most fantastic mime work I have ever seen.
This movie is full of great mime work. That's what it is.
So good. And just, she is so adorable. Let's just talk about Pepe. Because,
please, thank
we're going to have
to. That's my one note. That Pepe Miller
swoon.
Oh my God, this girl just grabs you, dude. Just
she
like
does.
Just like she does in like the fictional Hollywood universe where she becomes the it girl.
You get it.
Oh my God, absolutely. She could totally do that. She is fucking cute and funny and quirky and sassy and just, God, it works, man. Yeah. She grabs you. She has those big brown eyes. And she gives you that sly wink, and you just, God, you feel everything's going to be right in the world. It's perfect, man.
Yeah.
Best casting. I think it's the best performance in the movie.
Agreed.
God damn, man, that Pepe Miller.
Agreed. Side note here. Follow me on this one. It's gonna diverge, but it'll come back.
Let's go.
So recently I've been watching Entourage because I had nothing better to do. And so I went through all 8 seasons. And I know, and I watched the movie too. It's not great.
Damn.
But
yeah,
for some reason I watched it. And like it's like that junk media where you can watch it and it's like so quick, but like you're done and it's like, what even happened? Like, I don't think there's any depth to the show at all. But the show focuses around like Adrian Grenier, I think is his name.
And his three buddies.
Yeah, Vince something. I can't remember his name now. That's how much the characters resonated.
And who's
Turtle
this?
E, Vince, and Drama
Drama,
the main pack.
Drama's such a douche. He's supposed to be.
They're all douches.
They all are douches.
But Vince is like a movie star who has it. Like everybody loves him. James Cameron wants him in Aquaman because he saw this one Indian. Like he just has it. Like he's the it boy of Hollywood. And it's like, I never got that. With Pepe, I fucking get it. Like within like the first 5 minutes where she's dancing behind the curtain, I'm like, oh, she has something. Like she has charisma. Like I'm in.
I think
I'm
even before that
in.
When she stumbles into his red carpet thing and does this little sassy, that is like, yeah, man, you're in. And then that's what gets her in the paper and the, who's that girl?
Yeah.
And you know, I love she goes to her audition to be an extra and she sits down next to what is it? He was
is
in,
it John Goodman?
No, it's not John Goodman. It's what is his fucking name? Why can I not think of this? Great English actor. It's his only part. And that's another thing with this movie. There's a lot of little parts played by big name people.
His fucking Malcolm McDowell.
Yes, Malcolm McDowell. She sits next to him. It's his only part in the movie.
I can see his face and his voice like this.
Yes. And so she's all sassy and she has the paper and she sits down and it says, who's that girl? And she's telling her, you know, he looks at the pictures and then turns it around and just sort of slaps the paper like, well, but they don't know who you are. And then she gets the audition to be in the movie. She nails it right there out in the lot. She gets picked. And as she's walking in, she turns to him and she goes, hey, the name's Miller. Pepe Miller. And I God damn it, man. I fucking love this girl. She kills it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She works. Just
you should see
perfect.
This movie for her performance alone. If you have not ever. Because she will capture your heart instantly. Like, I don't care.
Yeah, I'd say one of the biggest disappointments is after this movie, you don't see her ever again, like, in Hollywood. Like, I've seen Jean Dujardin in, like, several movies he's popped up. And I think he's, like, in Monuments Men. Like, he pops up in, like, little roles, like, every now and then. Where is Berenice Bejo? Bejo? I don't know how you pronounce
let's
it.
Let's say it. Let's give her the proper
name. Berenice?
Berenice Bejo, or Bejo.
Bejo. Bejo,
I would
Bejo?
Think it's Bejo because
I think
the J.
Bejo too. I think
we're the
has,
only
like,
culture
Spanish.
That says J. Yeah.
So I would say Bejo. That's right. Berenice Bejo. So yeah, it's just really sad that she has kind of disappeared. Like she won. I don't think she won the best actress, but
and
I think
she
everybody loved her
she
in
should've.
This movie.
Yeah.
Like
I don't see how you can watch this movie and not love her. She
yeah.
Is, I don't know. I mean, we're one trick pony in it, but for real, like she's the best part of this movie. Like she has. I mean,
I would argue the cinematography
is really
and
good
just
too.
The execution of it all,
and
is
the fact
the best
that you're watching a silent movie in 2000 whatever in current year, and it's not boring. That's the craziest thing.
That is that's what I want to talk about too. Is like most period pieces, like I find so difficult to watch.
Yeah.
This one I could watch just again and again.
Yeah, it's really good.
Easy. Yeah.
My one, it's about 10 minutes too long, but it, who cares? The music is great. The music hits every pace, and it has to because, again, there's no fucking speaking. We'll say it a billion times. So the music does all the emotional work for you by getting you to where you... It sets the scene and the tone of what's happening and gives you those clues. Like when there's conflict in George's life, it... it gets somber and in the minor key, and when things are going happy, and you know, when a lot of times when Pepe's on screen, she's all popping and the music's popping along with her. So
yeah, a movie like this kind of lives or dies by the music, because it has to carry it, and it's perfect. It's not memorable. Like, I don't walk away with the artist's theme in my head.
No,
but for the movie, it fits perfectly for every scene. Like, it's and
that's
very fitting.
I think that's what a score like this needs to do. It needs to be there, but it doesn't need to stick out, because it's setting the tone, but it's not the focal point. The focal point is what on the actors are expressing, which they are doing great.
Agreed.
So,
yeah.
This movie also has John Goodman. He's the head of the film company.
Yeah.
In the movie, and he's the one that, well, I really like is at the very beginning, they're at the premiere for George Valentin's newest movie, and it's sort of got, they're trying to, and you just get this, that they're trying to push the new It girl that's starring in the movie with George, and she also seems to be John Candy's sort of little arm candy.
Mm-hmm.
Did I just say John Candy?
You said John Candy.
I meant John Goodman's arm candy.
Uncle Buck here.
Yeah,
oh,
not
my
Uncle
God.
Buck.
That's not John Candy's voice.
No. We're either...
I am the worst at impressions.
No, that's the thing. You're not. Your Bobcat is so on point. Like, we're either 100 or zero with these impressions. That's the thing. Like, we have no middle ground where people are like, I could see that. It's either, no, that's not... What? So, but I like that they're pushing her, or they're trying to, and George doesn't want anything to do with it, and she's really pissed off. He goes out to take his bow, and I love that little scene where, like, you think he's gonna pull her out next and she's waiting to turn, and he switches over and pulls out his dog. God, man, it's just and you know, she says, I'll get you for this, and yeah, it's even she doesn't, though. I mean, Pepe Miller becomes the big
kind of
Well, she's when talkies come in, she's the one that they show on the screen as doing the talkie sound test.
Yeah, but it's not like a typical Hollywood movie where, like, oh, she's going to be a thorn inside for the rest of the movie.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
she's the foil now. It's a very simple, like, well, she kind of gets something later on, and that's it. Like, that's all it is.
Even if she was being primed and groomed to be the new It girl, Pepe comes in and she's the new It girl. She blows up everywhere. So, yeah.
Agreed.
I do love, man. One of the big things, George, when Pepe comes into his room, you know, she obviously wants to be an actress. And he says, if you want to be an actress, you have to do something to stand out from the rest. And he just draws that little beauty mark on her.
Yeah.
But man, that adds so much to her. Like, it really does. It's crazy.
It's the Cindy Crawford mold.
Yeah. But I never liked it on Cindy Crawford. But fuck, it really works on Pepe Miller, man. Mm-hmm. That's all that I'm going to talk about, because she's the best. I don't know, man. George is also great. He has the best mime work, I feel.
He's fantastic. And I think about the mime work, too, what should be said is, like, their dancing skills. Like, these two actors are actually dancing and, like, doing this really hard, fast choreography dancing.
I think they have to have been classically trained. I think George, or the character, or whoever played Jean Dujardin, I'm sure in the French theater, he's definitely absolutely had to have theater work before film. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he definitely has to have had some mime exposure, and mime is a very French art form. It was born from France, so you can just tell it wasn't something I think that just happened for the movie. That he seems very well versed in acting with his face and his body and his emotions.
Yeah.
So,
they both do.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. They both do. I'd give that compliment to both of them.
So, I mean, again, it's not a very deep movie. It's very by the numbers. You know, kind of what's going to happen the whole time. Mm-hmm. It just does it so well.
Yeah, I think it's not very surprising. It's just expected and very well executed.
The surprise is the fact that it is a silent movie. I think that's where that's what shifts everything on the head, because it is by the numbers. You've seen the movie a lot of times, but the fact that you're watching a silent movie, and the fact that it is a love letter to silent movies, it doesn't go for the cheapness of it. It respects silent film from Hollywood in the 1920s,
and it does it so well. Like, I don't think we've mentioned yet that it's shot in full frame. It's like 4:3 ratio, like the movies were, and most movies are shot in 24 frames per second. This one shot in 22 frames per second and then sped it up a little bit to that 24, and this is apparently a technique they use in the 20s and 30s, so you get like these really kind of almost surreal quick character movements. Like, you might not notice it, but if you watch another movie, you're like, there's something different.
Yeah
Like, you wouldn't be able to pick it up, but it's there. And just like those little attention to details, it's just so good. Like, the director, I don't know if he won. I know it won Best Picture, but like,
I think he did win Best Director.
He deserves a lot of credit, because this movie feels like it was taken from the 20s and 30s. Like, it doesn't stick out.
It would absolutely fit in. You could take it back there.
Yeah.
take out a couple things, and yeah, people would just think it's fucking well done, man.
I got a question for you.
Hit me, brother.
So we talk about the story being, you know, whatever. Do you think this would have worked if it was same people, same story, same shot, but not black and white?
And not a silent movie? Or still a silent movie? I don't think so.
I would say if you have the silent movie, that's fine. Like, so you still have the title cards, you still have the silent, but like, let's say it was shot in widescreen with color. Do you think it would work?
Nah, it loses the charm, I feel.
You don't think it would even work like a little bit?
I mean, maybe, but it wouldn't. Again, it wouldn't have that charm and that it works so well because it's so obviously a well-crafted love letter to that era of movie. I think changing even a little bit of it, it'd still work. It'd be watchable, but it wouldn't have the charm.
I kind of agree. So. It's this weird concoction, and I almost want to compare it to Tarantino, where it feels like an homage of different things all put together very well.
I totally agree with that.
And I feel like if one of those things wasn't there, this movie wouldn't work and it wouldn't have been noticed or recognized for anything.
If the score tried to get above and come to the front, I think, again, it would be distracting. Whereas it's so perfect because it's there. Mm-hmm. And you notice it, but it's not a central theme. So
yeah, I think this movie is kind of amazing that not only does it exist, but it works.
Yeah, that it exists in this era. Again, it's crazy. We have a silent movie, and again, this movie won Best Picture, and I don't see how it could not have.
Yeah,
I
mean, that year.
It's also kind of. I mean, it's perfect Oscar bait.
It's Oscar bait because it's a movie about Hollywood, and then it's, you know,
it's a love letter to old Hollywood. Yeah, I mean, it's total Oscar bait, and I get that, but it also, I feel, duly deserves it. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
And so on that, you know, in that conclusion, I say recommended, yes, you should watch The Artist. Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody should. You might not like it.
I would...
I mean, if your favorite thing is Adam Sandler's recent Netflix thing, Artist probably is not for you. I'm not trying to be highbrow. I'm really not, because I am anything but highbrow. I love a good dick and fart joke. It is not for everybody, but I think everybody should see it.
I think jokes better than fart jokes.
I do too.
Yeah.
But I say give it a chance. It is the closest you'll get to a silent movie without watching a silent movie that you don't know is good. I say this one is good.
Yeah, I'd say it's, you know, if you are one of those people who haven't gone back and seen these classic black and white movies like, you know, Who's That Girl? Because that's an actual movie that they reference. Sunset Boulevard, like A Star Is Born, like these classics that The Artist is kind of based upon. If you've not seen those, I think this is the most accessible movie. If you are even interested in black and white, I would not go back to like the older movies. Watch The Artist first, and if you like it, then delve in.
Yeah, but, and even the older black and white talkies, you know, like a lot of the old Universal monster flicks.
Still,
those are really great movies, but if you don't appreciate and understand the black and white, like that was just a necessity at that point.
Yeah, it wasn't an artistic choice. It was just what they had.
Whereas this, it's absolutely artistic choice. So
I think this is a good litmus test.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Based on that, I absolutely recommend this movie. Yeah.
Cool.
And if you don't like it, then, well, I don't know. Then...
Go watch Adam Sandler on Netflix, y'all.
Sick burn.
That's, I mean, really, if you don't like it. I'm not hoity-toity myself. I'm not being highbrow because I love shit like that too. But if you don't like it, there's no hope for you. It's a great movie. Easy to digest.
Agreed.
Not a lot of depth to it. It can't get more simple. So
it's simple, fun, and entertaining. It's a good way to spend 100 minutes.
Yep, there it is.
So there you go.
That's our final word, man. Yeah, both recommend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good one. I don't think we've both recommended something for a little bit.
It's been a while.
So
it's been a while since I could.
You go to fucking Stained.
Recommend a movie with Kyle. It's been a while,
man. I'm surprised you got into Stained.
Like, I don't know where that came from. I had the fucking circus music in my head, and now Stained.
Yeah.
My life is fucked right now. I don't know what's up with me.
You got some drama, dude. You're Johnny Drama. Is that his name?
Isn't it Johnny Drama?
Yeah,
that's what it is. It's Vincent Chase, and now it's all coming back. The doucheness of Entourage.
My buddy loved Entourage, and I tried to watch it with him. And I mean, we did. I think a lot of it helped that I was stoned a lot when we were watching Entourage back in the day.
That's a perfect way to watch it.
Yeah, it was fine then, but I was still like, God, this is bad. Like, I do not care about these kids. Like, and that's the thing. I never finished it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just stopped watching on like the fourth season because we just stopped, and I didn't care. I had no. I was like, oh my God, what was happening with Johnny Drama?
And, yeah.
Vincent, like, I gotta know. No, I didn't care. It's fucking in one ear, out the other, just time passage. So
that's how it was for me, too. I was like, well, I laughed a couple times.
Apparently, there are some serious hardcore Entourage fans, though. I don't get it.
If you're a hardcore Entourage fan, write to me. Please let me know why.
If you are, write to us and recommend us something. We've had some recommendations, and we are going to be getting into those very soon. We love recommendations. And if you do have a recommendation for us and you'd like to reach out to us,
please write to us. You can find us at facebook.com/experiencegrind. You can reach Kyle over at the Twitter sphere at twitter.com/expgrindpodcast. You come to our website at www.experiencegrind.com. And, you know, find us on Stitcher, iTunes.
Yep.
Write to us wherever you want. We are listening. You can even email us at experiencegrindpodcast@gmail.com. So please reach out. Let us know what you want us to review. We'll do it.
Yep.
We are whores.
Yeah, we really are. Whores. We will take any and all requests.
Cheap whores.
You know, a lot of other podcasts will maybe ask you to do other things to get you to. We don't care. We like to do other people's things. That's what we want to do. So hit us up, man. Send us anything. Games, movies. That's really
comics. Kyle loves talking about comics.
I mean, I do. I really do. My wheelhouse is not nearly as deep as yours, but yes, right. I will get into it if somebody has a comics request.
It could on be that a side note, quest. You know, pretty easy.
Yeah. I would like to give a shout out to the guy who gave us the most recent request. He's our first request. His name is Paul Korn, cool dude, and he has his own comic that he writes. I've told you about this
you
guy.
You did tell me, yeah. I didn't know he was the one who sent the request, though.
He is. He's the one.
Cool.
And he has requested, I forget, so I'm not going to say that, but I will plug his comic.
I know what he did. Do you want me to say?
Yeah, go ahead.
So he recommended for video games the Tales from the Borderland.
And I gave him shit because he loved the fucking Walking Dead games, and he did not like that I shat all over him.
I mean, Paul Korn sounds like he has some good taste.
And as soon as he told me what the choices were, I was like, I knew you were going to make me play another Telltale game.
Because they're good, and you misunderstood it.
I don't know, Ed.
Yeah, misunderstood it. And then for movies, he recommended Brick.
Yeah, Brick.
Which is great because Ryan Johnson, I love.
I've not seen either of the movies he recommended. So it'll be great to come in as the unknown and experience them for the first time. And it's Brick and Lucky Number 11.
Which is also a great movie.
Which is weird because it stars Josh Hartnett.
And Bruce Willis.
And Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. And that's, I will tell you, one of the best double features I've seen in a theater was Lucky Number 11 and then Slither at the same time.
Man, Slither was fun.
Fantastic midnight movies, those two were.
Awesome. Okay. Well, so we're going to check those out. But you should also check out Paul's comic. It's called Wayward Cross.
I have to check this out now.
He writes it. It's pretty good, man.
Do you know what it's about? Could you do a quick synopsis?
It's got a lot of anime influence, a lot of sword fighting. It's really fun. And I think he does weekly-ish. It's sort of a shorter run, so it's episodic in that way. It's online. I believe it's Wayward Cross. I want to say .com. I think if you search for that.
Well, I think you could just search for Wayward Cross and then Paul Korn.
And I will also, I'll give links on the YouTube and the Twitter.
Look at this. I'm going to make sound engineer Andy's work even harder. Right here, you can see the link for Paul Korn's website.
I actually am the one that adds those on.
He's right here.
I will do that. Not sound engineer
I gave
Andy.
Kyle a bunch of work. Right here is the link. I'm touching
but
it.
But yeah, we'll link you there.
Click
so check
link.
Those out if you like comics. It's pretty fucking good. His artist is really amazing. I forget the dude's name, and I feel bad about that, but we'll give him a proper shout out, I promise, in the next episode.
Awesome.
Whatever it is. So
we will do that. And thank you again for your suggestions. Like, we love that.
Yeah.
And I cannot wait to make Kyle play another Telltale game.
Yeah. I can, but I'm going to do it because why not? So anyways, that's the show. So thank you guys as always for listening, and grind out.